I'm going to be talking about a model that Susan and I developed to analyze worker communication. And this was really inspired, this work was inspired a long time ago. It was a paper that Rob Page wrote around the time that I was a postdoc in his lab, and he developed a very simple network model looking at the activation of workers that really kind of was meant, I think, to set a baseline scenario for how information might be transmitted in insect societies and how division of labor might arise. And I was really annoyed by this model, and it took me a while to figure out why. And so the model that I'm going to be presenting is kind of a response to what annoyed me about Rob's model, and that was that it was ignoring, I think potentially, and I hope you'll agree, important point that social insects actually do communicate with each other, and that the ways that they communicate actually matter. The ways that the information is transmitted in a colony is something that we might consider as important. So the basic premise is in this model, in this talk, is going to be that worker task performance, I'm going to be looking at recruitment of workers to a new task, so activation of workers, that their task performance decisions are influenced or affected by social interactions. Workers communicate with each other, and that communication influences nestmates' labor decisions. And as an alternative, and actually this is a perfect connection, I think, to I thought a really interesting point that Anna made, a nice framework that she put up. I hate to think that one of the big inspirations for me intellectually from this meeting is going to be a connection with the advertising world. But her talk about push and pull advertising, I think, fits exactly into what I'm saying here. So push advertising is what I'm talking about, workers communicating with each other and influencing each other's decisions. The alternative is, I would argue, direct assessment of cues, direct assessment of either the abiotic or the biotic environment. And that is an alternative, that is a baseline against which we need to test our ideas about the importance of communication. I agree with all of that. What I'm going to do, though, is assume that the communication is important and it is playing a role, and go from there. So as examples, I mean, is this crazy? I don't think so. We have lots of examples of interactions among workers that do seem to influence task performance decisions. I'm just going to throw up a few of these. Obvious things like ant trails or stingless bee trails like we just heard about. Contact interactions, Deborah Gordon's work and some other folks looking at simple incidental contact type interactions, largely being done in ants. Biting interactions, some of my own work on Polybia paper wasps, and Stan Schneider and other people's works on vibration communication in Apis. So the main questions I'm going to try to address: how does variation in the details in the design of the worker communication system influence patterns of recruitment of workers to tasks at the colony level? So this is making that connection between individual interactions and group level output that Stan laid out very nicely at the beginning. And I'm going to be asking questions about, or trying to analyze, what aspects of the communication system are important. I'm going to talk a bit about sender effects. We're going to have senders and receivers engaging in communicative interactions. In terms of thinking about sender effects, we can talk about things like the design of the signal itself, of the information that's being transmitted. I'm also going to ask us to think carefully about receiver psychology. And I think that this is something that has been understudied and under-considered by social insect biologists and those of us that are interested in division of labor. We're going to talk about receiver psychology. I'm going to talk a bit about worker cognition. I think the model raises some really interesting issues, I think, in cognition. So here's a little example of the ways we might think about this playing out. So I'm going to give this little very simple diagrammatic representation. So here we have our nodes, the workers, the little dots. I'm going to throw up some edges, some interactions in a moment. And in this case, we'll be asking about repeated interactions. If interactions among individuals are repeated, how do those repeated interactions sum over time? In other words, sum in their effects on the receiver. Are repeated interactions additive in their effects? Are they exponential? Does it not matter? So here's our sender. she's interacting with a subset of her nest mates or group mates. Here she interacts with another set, interacts with them again, and then some of those become activated. So to get at these issues, Susie and I developed an individual-based simulation model. And I'll tell you some of the main features of the model. If you're interested in the gory details or getting the code, just get in touch with me. We're going to assume that response thresholds are in operation here. And I'll come back to what I mean by that in more concrete terms in a minute. We're going to look at iterative probabilistic interactions among workers. And in each interaction, we're going to have one individual serving as the sender. The other individual is going to serve as the receiver. And in this model, we'll have the ability to manipulate both colony or group characteristics and features of the individual workers. And we're going to be able to manipulate both senders and receivers. So how does the model work? What does it do? I'll try to give you a very stripped-down version of this. It's actually a very simple model, almost stupidly so, I think. And that's one of the things that I think is absolutely beautiful about it. It's so simple, I think it might turn out to be extremely general, and I think actually applicable to a lot of systems, not just insect societies. So we're going to set up a colony-wide demand for a task to be performed. And then the workers, the participants, the nodes, if you will, in our model, are going to interact probabilistically during discrete time bouts. When interactions successfully occur, they're going to be probabilistic. When an interaction occurs, it's going to lower the receiver's response threshold to the demand for demand for that particular task. And when the task demand exceeds that worker's response threshold, then she will become active, or he or she in the case of termites, and then begin performing the task. And then the output of the model is at the end of each discrete time bout, after we let everyone interact in this round-robin fashion, we're going to tally the number of workers that are active performing the task. And I'll talk about manipulating some features of, as I mentioned, colony design and the senders and receivers, the individual level manipulation. So we'll look at changes in group size, varying the probability of interacting, the strength of the interaction effect. In other words, how much does an interaction bump down the response threshold of the recipient? We'll also talk about things going in the opposite direction, so decreasing the probability that recipients will perform the task. We might call that social inhibition. We're also going to examine some features of receiver cognition. We're going to talk a bit about sensitization, so increasing the amount of response to an interaction after they're repeated. And then also we're going to look at processes of forgetting. If you're not interacted with, your response threshold starts to creep back up. What effect does that have on recruitment? So the model in universally generated this kind of output. So what we're looking at when the graphs take this form, this is looking at the cumulative count of the number of workers that have been newly recruited to the task over time. And actually we're looking in this case at the proportion of workers that have been recruited. And it always takes a logistic growth form. And I'm not going to go through the model. It's up there for your enjoyment. I'm not going to go through all the parameters in detail, but a logistic growth form is a universal prediction of this model. I do want to call your attention to one parameter, one feature of the model, because we're going to use this as a tool for comparing different treatment conditions with each other, and that is the amount of time it takes to reach the inflection point. So what you can see is that we start off slowly recruiting workers. It accelerates up to an inflection point. The inflection point is the time when 50% of the available workers have been recruited, and then it levels off at an asymptote, and of course the asymptote is, in most cases, all of the workers having been recruited. So we're going to look at the time to recruiting 50% of the workers. So one of the things that we can see here in this manipulation, we're manipulating group size or colony size. As colonies or groups get larger, the amount of time that it takes to recruit workers to the task goes down. And so we can see if we look at this inflection point, again, having recruited 50%, half of the workers, and we drop this down to the amount of time, the number of bouts that it takes to do that, you can see that there's this change in the rate of recruitment, in this case, again, with changes in group size. Well, what's the pattern of change? Turns out that also follows a fundamental universal rule in this model, akin to the logistic growth curve. And that is that for every variable that we looked at, every variable or parameter that we manipulated, we got this kind of relationship between rate of recruitment and value of the parameter. It's an inverse first order function. So what we can see is that for low values of whatever the parameter is, in this case it's the probability, per worker probability of interacting during a given time bout, at low values, small changes in the probability of interacting lead to very large changes in the expected rate of recruitment. And then as we get out towards the maximum possible rate of recruitment, further changes in parameter values lead to very small changes in the rate of recruitment. So what this suggests is that the system is going to be very sensitive at low values, less sensitive to changes at high values, and that's going to set some constraints on changes in the rate of recruitment of workers. Now we can make the model get a little bit more sophisticated and start to ask questions about, well, how might we modulate the rate of recruitment and perhaps even the proportion of the colony that actually gets recruited to a task. So one thing that we can do is simply ask what happens if the workers that are active performing the task no longer interact. And so we might imagine that happening if they've been, say, called away from the nest, or say foraging, they're performing a task elsewhere. That kind of worker can't, by definition, interact with her nest mates. And what we see is that when the active workers are away, when they're not interacting, that modulates the rate of recruitment to the task. If we start messing with cognition, this is looking at sensitization. If we change the strength of a given interaction's effect on a receiver upon repetition, we change the rate of recruitment of workers. So the time to recruiting half of the workers goes down. So compared to the control condition, the filled in circles, if we add a value, an arbitrary unit value of 1 every time an interaction is repeated, we get a certain amount of decrease in time to recruiting workers, so an increase in the recruitment rate. If we multiply by the number of interactions, we get a further acceleration of recruitment. One point of this is, you know, I have no idea which of these scenarios might be biologically realistic or relevant, and I think we know very little about this. The point is that it's important for us, if we're interested in task allocation, if we're interested in worker recruitment, we need to understand things like whether and how repetition of interactions influences the responses of the receivers. And I think we really know almost nothing about that, and I think Stan is going to address this issue with some new data that he's collecting. Here's, I think, where the model gets really interesting, and I'm kind of wrapping my brain about ways to follow up on this. If we start including forgetting in the model, I think we get some really interesting patterns coming out. All forgetting means is that if in a given time bout you were not interacted with, you start to forget about previous interactions, and so your response threshold begins to creep back up towards its original set value. And we arbitrarily decided that the response threshold would not go beyond its original set limit for any given worker. What happens is, if we include forgetting, perhaps not surprisingly, we get this diminution in recruitment of workers. We actually start to get a suggestion that we're plateauing out at a different asymptote as well as changing the rate of recruitment. The other thing that's interesting is that the model gets highly variable in its output. Number or proportion of workers that are recruited in a given run of the model starts to vary extremely dramatically when we incorporate forgetting, which is a random process that's independent of the random process of interacting, but in the opposite direction. And I think this is a really interesting finding of the model. And then finally, if we include social inhibition, So if active workers are actually decreasing the probability of performance, we get a similar kind of effect that we got with forgetting. So we're plateauing out at a lower level, we're decreasing the rate of worker recruitment, but the output of the model is much more stable. The variation, as you can see, is much narrower in this condition than it was under conditions of forgetting. So if we adjust simple aspects of worker communication, we affect task performance. I would argue then that the worker communication system itself should evolve by selection at the colony level to affect patterns of and rates of recruitment of workers to tasks. And I would also argue, and I think this is really the most important for me, biological take-home point, worker cognition is really centrally important to understanding division of labor. Cognitive processes like forgetting, other kinds of learning like sensitization or summation of repeated interactions are directly relevant to understanding worker recruitment if communication is important in these systems. And I think you'll agree that given the fact that these signals exist, we can probably safely assume that it is important, that it has evolved by natural selection, at least in some species, at least for some tasks. And then finally, in closing, I am required to remind you, in case you have been absolutely incensed by some wildly controversial thing that I've said or offended, this research was supported by the National Science Foundation. I happen to be working at the foundation right now, and therefore, it is important to remember that the conclusions, opinions, or findings that I have presented do not represent the opinions, point of view of the National Science Foundation. They are my own, and I will assign at least 50% of the blame to my wife, Susan, my co-author as well. So I'll close with that. I guess we're on break time now. So if people want to chat, whatever, throw tomatoes at me, fire away.